Hello, and welcome to the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. I'm your host, Benjamin Douglas, and this is the show where each week I read a chapter from a different indie author. Thanks for joining me for today's reading. All right, thank you for being here today for episode number one, the first ever episode of the Book Speaks podcast. This is exciting. I'm excited. And full disclosure, I'm a little terrified because conventional wisdom holds that the first episode of a podcast is the episode that will be most listened to. But this is also my first ever podcast. So I want to say a big heartfelt thank you to you for being here, checking it out, giving it a listen, seeing what it's all about, and for being gracious with me as I sort of figure out what I'm doing. Yeah, but it's going to be a good show. I have a really exciting lineup for the first few episodes. We're going to be reading from authors Michael Anderle, Patty Jansen, and Timothy Ellis. And then after that, I've also got Evan Pickering, Mark E. Cooper, and Joseph Lalo already on deck. So some exciting stuff. Successful indie authors who are selling well, especially on Amazon. A lot of science fiction right out the gate, which is fine with me because I'm a fan. I hope to diversify the genres a little more as we go on. But, you know, what can you say? Science fiction is hot right now. So anyway, speaking of science fiction, today we'll be reading from Michael Anderle. And I'm going to say a few words of introduction about him. But before we do, I want to say a little bit more about the show, since this is the first ever episode. So, what is the value here? Why should you keep listening instead of jumping over to the Creative Pen or the Sell More Books show or the Science Fiction and Fantasy Marketing Podcast? Just to name a few of my personal favorites, by the way. Well, of course, if you're an indie author or an aspiring indie author, or really maybe an author of any kind, the answer is you absolutely should listen to those podcasts. But I hope that you'll find a different value here, that I'm offering something else. My goal is to curate a collection of writing samples from the indies you and I are all seeing on lovely forums like Kboards, and big, important Facebook groups, and on blogs, and on all of these important podcasts and popular podcasts, the indies whose advice we're hearing, and perhaps at times taking, whether or not we've read any of their books, whether or not we know them at all as authors. My hope is that the Book Speaks podcast will act in two ways. First, as a funnel to those books. Hey, if you're a fan like I am, or if you're a reader and not a writer at all, welcome. I really hope these readings entertain you and lead you to exciting new discoveries, maybe to some authors you wouldn't have found otherwise. If you're a writer or an aspiring writer, then I hope this will act as a body of reference material for you, so that you have some additional context on what your peers and mentors are all about, so that you can get a feel for things like pacing and tone in their prose. So that's my spiel. And if nothing else, I hope the show is very entertaining for you. The show's brand new, of course, right now, as of the date of this launch, March 31st, 2017. So if you're an indie who'd like your work to be featured, and especially around this date, please don't hesitate to contact me, because I'm building a list of episodes. You can find me at benjamindouglasbooks@gmail.com. I'm also on Kboards as Benjamin Douglas. So, on to today's author, Michael Anderle, Very nice guy, very gracious when I contacted him. He got right back to me, immediately said, yes, of course, I love the idea, you can read. So I'm going to begin by reading Michael's Amazon author bio. And bear with me because this is written in a mix of the third and first person. So here we go. Michael Anderley. Okay, weird talking about myself in the third person. 1967 until hopefully a long time from now, was born in Houston, Texas. A very curious child, he got into trouble a lot. What to do with an inquisitive mind when he was grounded? Read! Okay, done with all of that third-person stuff. In the first 20 years, I mostly read science fiction and fantasy. In the last 10 years, I have enjoyed urban fantasy and military fiction. With this background, I've been blessed with creating the Cortherian Gambit series, a well-selling and fan-loved collection of stories. The fans have propelled these stories beyond my wildest imagination, and they should get all of the credit for sharing with friends, family, and occasionally the random person on the street. They are fantastic! All right, so there's Michael Anderley crediting his fans. And now I'd like to read his Amazon author rank. This is Amazon author rank beta as of March 30th, 2017, when I'm recording this introduction. Number 57 overall. That's overall in the entire Amazon bookstore. Number 57. Number 5 in Kindle eBooks, Science Fiction and Fantasy, Science Fiction. Number 6 in Kindle eBooks, Literature and Fiction, Horror. Number 9 in Kindle eBooks, Science Fiction and Fantasy. Number 11 in Books, Science Fiction and Fantasy. And number 12 in Books, Science Fiction and Fantasy, Science Fiction. All right, so there are his rankings as of today. Obviously, Mr. Anderley is doing something right. He's doing something really well because he is selling books like hotcakes. I gotta tell you. A couple things about Michael. I first encountered him on K-Boards in this big post he had written about his success shortly after he'd started taking off. And it's sort of a famous and now sometimes infamous thread. He described himself, I think, as an indie author outlaw, because many of the common pieces of advice on K-Boards he had outright ignored, according to him, because he just didn't really know about it when he got started. He seems to have begun building a mega fan base very organically at first. And he's on a couple of podcasts. I think the Rocking Self-Publishing podcast comes to mind. He has an episode there where he discusses how he did this, reaching out to fans through material in his front and back matter in his books, and some other things. So go check that out if you're interested. Something else to which he attributes his success is the sort of melting pot of genre tropes that he's working with. You'll notice his author rankings are mostly in science fiction and fantasy science fiction, and then he's number 6 in horror. Well, I don't think I'm giving away too many spoilers if I say basically it's vampires in space. Vampires in sort of a future world. So you've got some tropes from urban fantasy, and you've got some tropes from science fiction. By the way, these are not tropes from any old genres. These are tropes from two very hot genres right now, right? I mean, I know there's a constant sort of death knell being sounded for urban fantasy especially in traditional publishing, apparently. But from everything that I've seen, there are still people doing really well in urban fantasy right now. And science fiction is certainly undeniably having a big moment, at least in the indie market right now. So I think he kind of hit a sweet spot in terms of genre mixing, trope mixing, which a lot of people talk about being a really risky thing to do, but he seems to have just found a really good formula that speaks to a lot of people. Michael also writes very quickly. He's published in quick succession. He's done some interesting strategies along the way. He says what he does is he tries to hack the system, the indie author system, finding new ways to try to leverage the most success he can out of it. One of the things he's done, for example, is put out shorter titles in between novel releases, novella, short story sort of length. Another thing he's done, as he's built a fan base of other authors, is begun to co-author works. And this is part of something I'd like to point out that I saw happen in 2016 specifically, and maybe it was happening a little sooner than that in 2015. But we had the rise of a sort of mentor author. I saw this in Chris Fox and also in Michael Anderle. Interestingly, Chris Fox and Michael Anderle both coming from the tech world and both, at least in 2016, writing in a science fiction space. I thought that was sort of interesting. They both set themselves up as mentors, sharing advice with other authors, almost sort of gurus. And I use that term with nothing but respect for these two because they've both had really great success with their book sales and with their fan base. So yeah, just an interesting trend, or I don't know if it's big enough to call a trend, but an interesting thing that has happened in the last 2 years, year and a half, as exemplified by these two men, sort of mentor as platform. Kind of interesting. And in part of that from Michael Anderle, I want to mention lastly, is this big Facebook group. And I think there might be a forum website for it as well. It's called 20 Books to 50K, 20 Books to 50K. Check that out if you're on Facebook. It's a big group. Lots of indie authors are part of that. Lots of authors. Lots of people giving lots of helpful advice. By and large, it's a very positive atmosphere. You know, it's kind of a young subset of the indie author community. I don't think it has a lot of battle scars just yet. So there's a lot of upbeat attitude going on in that group to lift your spirits. One last thing I'd like to clarify, and that is that this reading does not come from the official audiobook. This is just my reading created just for this podcast. If you'd like to hear the rest of the book in audio form, please do go to the author's webpage or the author's Amazon author page to see if the audiobook is available. So, without any further ado, big thank you again to you for listening. Big thank you to Michael Anderle for letting me read his work. And here we go, on to today's reading. Death Becomes Her, The Quirthyrian Gambit, Book 1, by Michael Anderle. Chapter 1. May those who fight have honor, else we are doomed in the end. Unknown Politician's Stump Speech. You know the problem with honor? Honor can be a restraining bitch on you. I've decided honor was for the last generation. Bethany Ann Reynolds, Queen of the Unknown World. Virginia, USA. Cautiously, the large agent entered the dilapidated wooden warehouse in Old Town, Virginia. Taking up most of a city block and surrounded by old, weather-beaten and rusting pipes, it was an eyesore to everyone walking or driving by it. He spoke into his mic. Carl, 3 heartbeats. Smells are incredibly pungent, with a slightly sick smell, kind of like they're going through severe body issues, or eating lots of yellow curry. I'm not sure which. He listened as Carl retorted over the earpiece, "Bill, for the record, Indian food is magnificent, and your culinary bigotry is showing." "Easy for you to say. I'm the one who has to smell it when you go overboard eating it." Stopping the conversation and moving silently, the agent squeezed his entirely too big body through holes which certainly were too small. "Okay. Inside perimeter, and we'll be making contact inside 30, that is 30 seconds. Smells include heavy bleach, with a subtle aroma of aforementioned nastiness. Still 3 tangos. No heartbeat warnings. No talking." Carl was viewing the video take coming from the needle camera attached to Bill's heavy helmet and mask. While there was no way Carl could ever make it on a takedown, he certainly enjoyed sitting in on the real-time action. "Okay, big guy. I have all the info coming in from the sensors outside. We have no movement and nothing out of the ordinary. We don't seem to have any issues with flanking, so you are a go from this side. Your call, Billy boy." Bill swore to himself. If there was any one thing that got under his skin more in the last 15 years working with Carl other than being called Billy boy, he didn't know what it was. One of these days he was going to give Carl the monumental wedgie he kept asking for. Except he never said it when Bill was around, and Bill never thought about it except times like this. One of these days, though, God help him, and the big guy would be upset, but he was going to make it so Carl had to be surgically removed from his shorts. Time to get back to business. "Okay. Approaching and have visual. 3 contacts, all dressed in jeans and shirts. Nothing different except 2 have hunting vests on. 1 has his off and is messing with it. Can't see what he's doing as his back is to me." At that moment, one of the men cocked his head and gestured at the other 2, who suddenly looked in Bill's direction. "You've been made, loudmouth!" Carl couldn't keep the concern out of his playful jibe. "Shit. Okay, apparently this might get bloody. Talk to Primary and let him know we might need cleanup." "Primary is already in listen-only mode. I'm sure he's setting up dispatches already." Bill heard the 3 guys around the card table stand up and fan out, ready to face him. He sighed. It wasn't as if he was worried. He had taken down so many people in fights like this, or gunfights, it wasn't even funny. While he looked about 38, he was closer to 76 years old. Pretty young for a vampire, actually. While bullets hurt, he would mend, and the pain would remind him not to get sloppy next time. Bill stood up, all 6'4", and confidently strode right over to the 3 guys, stopping about 10 feet away. Damn if that smell bothering him wasn't peculiar. The bleach was causing his nose severe issues, but he could still smell something over that nasty stuff. Carl watched through the video link as Bill started asking the guys if they would like to come quietly, or... He never got the next word out, as all 3 rushed Bill, and the signal from his headgear suddenly stopped. The incoming video from a couple of the cameras outside that weren't damaged showed the whole wooden warehouse go up in flames while smoking embers rained down from the sky in streaks onto nearby buildings. Carl was pretty sure that in seconds there wouldn't be a piece of the engulfed warehouse left. His best friend, his partner, had just vanished in a big ball of heated urgency and consumption. Carl just stared at the screens, willing Bill to come running back out through the flames. Someone knew they were coming, and they knew how to take a vamp down. three of them were willing to take their own lives to make it happen. The color, what little was left, drained from Carl's face. The shock of losing his friend, the shock of being so mistaken about Bill's safety, left Carl staring at the screen. The ringing of the phone broke through his pain, his stupor. It was the primary contact. He hit the talk button. "Yeah?" His voice barely a whisper. A gruff voice from the other end of the line. "Tell me he has enough parts left that he can make it back to us, Carl," said Frank, their primary contact with the government. He had been working his solo career deep in the bowels of the darkest areas of security so long he predated Carl by decades. "I have special ops ready to extract in 5 minutes." "No, Frank. We just lost him. All of him. I just lost my fucking best friend." Carl wanted to slam the button down as anger and anguish directed both at those who killed Bill and himself rose up. "We can't get noticed right now. We're obviously being watched, and something is so rotten in Denmark I can't even think straight." "I'm so sorry, Carl." Frank knew that there wasn't much he could say. Carl was his third contact on the other side of the red line, and he was aware that it was Carl's first loss. Frank had been through two others before this, and while he interacted with the agents, he was uncomfortable around them. Frank knew that no matter what the protocol said, it was never his program. "What's our next step, kid?" Frank had to get Carl thinking again. While Carl wasn't young, compared to Frank's near-century mark, he was a drop in the bucket. "Step?" Carl sounded like his mind was just idling. Nothing going on, as the take from the outside cameras showed the burning warehouse and registered the sirens in the distance. Probably Frank's work. As much as Carl wanted to yell and scream, cry and drink himself into oblivion, there was only one response. With a voice only starting to come back, Carl replied, "Do? Frank, there is only one choice. I have to wake him up." Any color left in Carl's face totally faded away. "Oh my God," he thought. "What's going to happen now?" Frank, on the line hundreds of miles away, had much the same thought, except his was even more concise. It was simply, "Oh, shit." Washington, D.C. Bethany Ann Reynolds was a sight to behold. Coming down the inside of Spook Central in Washington, she received surreptitious glances from a couple of the guys. Although her hair was jet black, her personality could be straight from a redhead at the best of times. The ones who were smart forced their gazes away instead of watching her walk down the hall. The view was not worth the scathing look, should Bethany Ann notice. Or the ass-kicking during martial arts workouts later. She was only 5'3", and for most of the guys, that gave them a significant height and reach advantage. She had a long upper torso, and her legs were a little short for her height. She tended to wear higher heels to compensate. It was obvious she was angry, and when Bethany Ann was angry, her better nature took a sabbatical, and while she might apologize later, it was always better not to risk the twins in the first place. Some guys never understood the danger, or decided just to chance it and watch the agent go down the hall. No matter how many HR training classes on appropriate behavior some guys take, it never overcomes their natural predilection to be an ass. Today, however, was their lucky day. She never glanced in anyone's direction. She strode through the hallway in a carefully tailored, expensive dark suit, with a piece of paper in her hand and her blue eyes flashing a warning to keep the hell away. It worked. Martin Brennan, her boss, or at least her advisor, no matter what the org chart said, for the last 5 years, heard her coming from 30 feet away. There was no mistaking those very loud, very determined steps. He sighed. It wasn't like this was his plan. He loved her like a daughter, and just like fathering a teenager, he was about to get ripped for something he had nothing to do with. This discussion, he decided, was so going to suck. Military Base, Colorado Mountains. The klaxon was sounding somewhere way in the back, past all of the pipes, and Matthew Wainwright was getting very annoyed that apparently it had become his shit duty to go and see about it. He had been relegated to this out-of-the-way floor, deep underground on the base, some 3 days ago, to deal with some of the time-worn, really antique, really useless scientific equipment from the war. Not even from recent decades. This equipment was the serious relic-style 1940s stuff. He felt like he was doing research on the Philadelphia experiment, and somehow pulled the shortest straw. To top off his growing frustration with dust, grease, faded pencil forms, and boxes full of useless crap, he had to be around when some fuse must have finally shorted and the stupid klaxon started up. God hated him. He really did. With disgust, he dropped the handfuls of old paperwork he was digging through in the box on the old, gray metal makeshift workbench that had seen better centuries. Time to go through Junkyard City and beat some sense into something that really shouldn't have been built this dependable, he thought. Matthew grabbed a huge flashlight and a heavy wrench and started walking down the lanes created by the pipes everywhere. Sometimes it felt like he was in the oversized engine room of a battleship, rather than underneath hundreds of feet of rock in the Colorado mountains. Next time he talked with his parents, he was going to let them know that the recruiter's comments about seeing the world should conjure up thoughts of seeing the Earth's sphincter hole rather than being in Europe. While the buzzing from the old fluorescent lamps couldn't be heard over the klaxon around the corner, the crappy light they produced let him see well enough. He had gone down two lanes, only to have to backtrack because they were dead ends. He was able to snake down between two pipes and get onto a path with yellow stripes on the edges and a red line down the middle. Huh, he thought. I've never seen any lanes with red lines. Since the lane seemed to be going in the direction of the noise, he decided it would be easiest to take the path of least resistance. General Lance Reynolds, base commander, was talking with his secretary, Patricia, when his phone lit up on a landline from inside the base. She reached across the desk and picked it up before he could so much as bat an eye or appreciate the view. Damn, but he was getting slow in his old age. General's office, state your case. She was ever so not by the book, but if efficiency had a middle name, it was Patricia, so he didn't push the issue. Klaxon, level 5, right. Won't shut off. Yes, I can hear it. I'm surprised that you have a working phone down there. Wait, say that again. The door was opening when you arrived? Yes, it's right outside the door. I get that. It's hurting my ears right now. There's an envelope attached?
Mm-hmm.
I'll let him know. Right, you won't touch anything. She hung up. Lance raised an eyebrow.
Seems like we have a little shake-up down on 5. We have an old-time war vault that's suddenly activated, with an envelope attached to the inside of the door. It's addressed to the base commander.
Lance continued the single raised eyebrow. She said nothing. Damn, it used to work. He sighed. Okay, what else? She seemed confused.
It says, on your honor, sir.
Washington, D.C. Bethany Ann rapped on the door and waited half a second before barging into Martin's office, face red and eyes furious. He put up a hand to forestall the bitching. Close the door without breaking it, and I'm not at fault. He chose this particular order for the two phrases because he didn't want to replace the glass again. The last time wasn't Bethany Ann's fault, but he was sure her previous efforts to reduce his glass to shards had helped. After a significant effort to restrain her desire to slam the door, Bethany Ann turned back around and didn't give Martin a chance to get a word in edgewise.
What is the meaning of this? I have a few months, Martin, to finish my case, and damn it, I can! There is no proof that I've only got 6 months left to live. There's only the doc's best guess. Otherwise, I am fine. Nothing even comes back on any of the physicals. I'm doing better, if anything. Who pulled this bullshit request and took my case and shipped me out?
Martin waited for a second to see if she was done.
Well?
Apparently she was. Martin squared his jaw and said 3 words that were sure to fuel the flames of her ire. I don't know. He stared at her, and she glared back at him. He could see the logic synapses firing in her brain. If anything, she was the brightest he had. Hell, the brightest he'd ever known. If he could have just a few more years with her out in the field, there was no telling how many cases she would close. As it was, Mother Nature was being a real black-hearted bitch. Bethany Ann had a very rare blood disease, one they never even had the ability to check for until recently. The doctors, although not 100% sure, pretty much agreed she had less than 6 months to live. With her only 28 years old, it was a crying shame. Martin admitted to doing a little of the crying himself when no one was looking. Besides the physicians, he was the only other soul who knew. She wouldn't even tell her father. He had raised her on all of that male testosterone bullshit he was indoctrinated with in the military. Figures, Martin thought. Treat her like a boy and see what you get. Not easy to get close to, and since her mom died at almost exactly the same age of unexplained causes, it was most likely genetic and passed down, and she was the first and only child. Getting to the end of her logic chain, she narrowed her eyes. If my father so much as mentions my condition before I can tell him, I will personally fly back to Washington and kick your boys so hard you will sing falsetto until Christmas. Martin put up his hands. Duly noted, Bethany Ann, and for the record, I'm innocent. I wouldn't abuse your trust like that. Martin didn't even bother with the insubordination. Bethany Ann never meant to hurt friends, but her temper was also apparently genetic, considering the rumors about her father's famous rages. Cooling down, Bethany Ann strode over to the two chairs in front of Martin's desk and sat in one, tapping the paper against one of the Christian Louboutins she really enjoyed wearing when working in the office. The only reason Martin knew them was because of the red soles. He counted silently in his head, expecting to hit 30 before her next question. He got to 17. "If you didn't tell the general, and I'm still on the team..." It was evident this paper she was tapping on her shoes was proper orders, and she was still gainfully employed. "Why the hell am I being sent out to the middle of the country?" "That," Martin stated, "is the question of the morning." This concludes another episode of the Book Speaks podcast, where the book speaks for itself. Thanks for joining me, your host, Benjamin Douglas, for another indie author reading. If you liked what you heard, be sure to visit http://thebookspeakspodcast.wordpress.com for more episodes and for links to the author's website and the author's Amazon author page in the show notes. If you'd like to follow me on my own author journey, you can find me at http://benjamindouglasbooks.wordpress.com. And of course, if you're an indie author interested in having your work featured on the show, or if you're interested in discussing having your book read and produced by me as an audiobook, feel free to contact me at benjamindouglasbooks@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you have a productive and enjoyable weekend.